And so we move on to the next section here, which is the present crisis of meaning and evil.
Mm.
So Nietzscheism, his nihilism, anticipated the present crisis of meaning, which is impressive. So, but we're in a crisis. We're in a crisis of meaning here. The red lights are going off. We've got the whoop whoop siren. We're in a crisis of meaning. We're in it more than any could be imagined. Philosopher Brian Mage. Speaks of the fear of what he calls the void of eternal nothingness that awaits those who die. Well, we just die, we cease to exist. And now, you know, you look into the void and sometimes the void looks back, except this void doesn't look back. It just isn't there. His fear of disintegrating into the void at death is the cause of another fear, the meaningless attached to life. Mm. I'm going to build this business up. I'm going to have 14 children. I'm going to make them all entrepreneurs themselves, and then I die, and nothing really matters.
Yeah.
And,
who knows what's going to happen, maybe
3 generations, and you know, how many people know Rockefeller gave us light to exist after 6 p.m. that caused more people to read than ever? No, he's just some fat cat guy who did some bad things, and, you know, maybe also some good things and got us on oil. Okay, sure. But yeah. He also did that, but we're slowly losing that, and that was only 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. Look in your own family tree. You know your grandparents. You might know your great grandparents. You might know 1 generation back if you've studied your family history. Who do you know before that?
Yeah,
everyone passes away. Yeah. Everyone winks out of existence in memory, even if it's written down. Someone has to rediscover that, or care, or write something and get it out to more people. But even then. So your footnote in history, you're a name on a page. What have you done? What does life matter? Right. We're all nothing in the end.
And so he says this.
I've filled us with hope. Continue this large book.
He says this ever nagging fear tends to lead people straight back to the God that the West has desperately tried to erase. Right. Because we realize that, you know, this meaninglessness, this void, as, you know, this philosopher suggested, is fearful, you know, and it results in nihilism. And so it leads us, he says, back to God. Death is the most poignant reminder of the ever-present specter of evil in the world. It is arguably the most fearsome of all evils, right? Death, right? Because now all of it, if there's no God, it's all over. Right?
The Old Testament points to it. You know, vanity of vanity, everything's vanity. Then we all die. You know, the wages of sin is death. I mean, it's not, the wages of sin is a really hard life.
Yeah.
And so you just need to just have that positive influence on your life and you can be living your best life now. No, the wages of sin is death. Repent, for the kingdom of God is at hand.
Yeah, yeah. And so evil, no matter how much we wish to suppress it, he tells us, it implicates, you know, that God, right? It drives us to God for answers, a God that we instinctively know looms larger than the pain that this world seeks to crush us with.
Right. So the crisis of secularization, with all its muddiness and uncertainty about meaning, ethics, and values, has magnified the problem of evil so that even confident believers in God face unprecedented struggles. Look at the early church. What did they have to contend with? Slavery, being ostracized from the only thing that tied them together. It wasn't the internet age. You didn't have resources outside. You had the resources of your friends and your family, and you're going to break away to join this cult called Christianity, the Way. That sounds very culty. And no, we have thousands of years of synagogue history here. come back into the fold. And so, you know, they had to face that. Or, you know, the bubonic plague, the Black Death, all these things that people experience even when Christianity is well known. They have to face these struggles. So as a result, then, a contemporary Western society appears to have more difficulty facing pain and suffering than any other culture in history. Moderns have lost the capacity for grappling with evil. So in the East, when you say, you know, good, evil, it's just the two sides of the same coin. You have to look at the evil and good and the good and evil. You have to find the balance. You have to find the force. And then you go and reach nirvana. Well, there, evil is just a thing to kind of find the balance to and find the good in. And then your scales balance and you reach the next plane of existence. Mm-hmm. But for us, and then you throw out God on top of that, what do you do with that? And so here's the crisis that Christensen's talking about
here. Yeah, yeah. And even in the West, people in the past faced, he says, far greater daily tragedies than we do today. yet they had better mental resources to handle them, right? Loss, pain, suffering, violence, and death were far more common in their direct experiences in the past, yet they created far less anxiety, he tells us. Yeah. Evil and suffering were accepted as a normal part of life, right? Today, he tells us, suffering is a strange intrusion, right? To be avoided at all costs. We're more shocked and undone by suffering than were our ancestors. Yeah. We're more connected than ever before with the internet and that sort of thing, social media, smart devices. Yet we face, he tells us, an epidemic of loneliness. Even though we're more connected, interminable bouts of stress, anxiety, acute panic attacks are increasingly the norm as they increase, right? Yeah. And so, what he's suggesting here is once we've pushed God out of the picture, we lose the resources that we have to deal with evil, right? So now evil is even a greater problem than it was when God was in the picture, right? We have no resources, and we expect things to be fine. We expect to be able to overcome things, but we can't. And so we're in this crisis, he tells us, right?
Yeah. I had parents that followed the MPAA guidelines of if you were under 17, you couldn't go see a rated R movie. Saving Private Ryan came out. I really want to see this. Saving Private Ryan, this is amazing. I love World War II history. And so I got permission to go with them to go see it. And they were concerned about witnessing the violence. Mm-hmm. And it was ironic because I was probably 16 or so when it came out. So 2 more years, and I could have been the same men who were old enough to go over there and fight and see the death and suffering. And so it's funny that here's 80 years later, and they're concerned about me witnessing in my understanding, like my very cognitive form of understanding, this is a movie meant to portray realistic things and done well. Of course, we all, if you've watched Saving Private Ryan, how great even that opening scene is. Yeah. And it makes you feel things. But then, go to Black Death, where something like 30% of the entire world's population is dying at your feet and you're raising kids. Life continues on, life finds a way type deal. and you have kids that see death, and death kind of, it becomes a wash to them. And here now we're saying like, if your kids are on YouTube and they see, war-torn nations, but that removes us from then seeing the visceralness of war if we don't see it. And so, there's a good Star Trek episode where Kirk essentially launches a hot war after a cold war where they would kill their own side so that, a culture was preserved and the violence wasn't there. And he's like, no, war needs to be violent so you can see why you don't just kill people and you work towards a common peace. One of my favorite Star Trek episodes. So there's my Star Trek reference for this episode. So again, that dealing with it, and he goes on throughout this chapter here of kind of saying like we don't like death, but once death is faced with us, we have to come to terms with what that means. And
part of the problem he's raising is that it's we can't come to terms
right, with it, right? Not by ourselves.
So
secularization has shifted the focus to personal esteem, affluence, comfort, health, pleasure, and satisfaction. My phone will only boot up in 4 seconds. It needs to be faster.
Yeah.
And I really have a hard life because 4 second boot up time. Why am I even booting up my phone?
Yeah, I have to wait too long.
My phone Oh, gross. All to be showered on us instantly. Louis C.K., if you don't listen to him, that's fine. He has this bit where he talks about being in an airplane and getting on the internet, fine. but the internet's kind of bad and it keeps dropping out. And he's just like, oh, this is terrible. I hate this. But he's like, you didn't even know you could access the internet from essentially space in a flying machine. And so the juxtaposition in his head. And of course, you know, he does it a lot funnier than I would. But you know, we come to that point in our lives of comfort. And we have no concept of what uncomfortable is, or in comparison with what other people face. So unfortunately, all the mechanisms with which our secular age has provided us for surviving the onslaught of pain and suffering are failing. You know, go to the psychiatrist. Oh, but they're going to not invalidate your pain, and so you go into it, or you have to do extreme measures to cut out people in your life. Well, I don't want to cut out those people in my life. Well, they're bad for your health or whatever. So, just the options provided to us don't seem to be working. We're the most heavily medicated group of people. More people die from prescription medication than they do from illegal narcotics. We're so affluent. We have the most nutrients that leave our body without our body absorbing it, which, you know, offer, you know, Columbus's people a lime, and, you know, they wouldn't get scurvy that way.
Yeah,
but yeah. we don't face that here in the West.
We're bloated with limes.
Yeah, yeah. But I can get a lime in the middle of the frozen tundra of Michigan anytime that I want to, and that's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just, you know, I talk with someone who takes different fruits and vegetables and pies and stuff, and gives them to pigs afterwards. It's like, oh, were these like going bad? No, they're just a little blemished, and people aren't going to get them that have like a little bruise on them.
Right.
But it's still fine. Yeah. Yeah. Just yeah, people don't like that's how picky we become. So once catastrophe comes knocking on our door, we don't know how to answer. Venturing outside our safe spaces, we are paralyzed. What's more, we are paralyzed inside our safe spaces too.
Yeah. So it's paralyzed all the way down.
Right.